Welcome to the James River Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
In 1947, Dutch businessman Ben Pond sketched out his concept of a VW bus. When it first went into production in 1950, it was only the second kind of product that Volkswagen made, the first being the Beetle. It was called the Type 2. It was literally the very first van. By the 1960s, it became a symbol of counterculture types who wanted to stand out from the crowd. In a lot of ways, this bus is a fitting prop for our series on Philippians and for our text today. Because just as this VW bus was a prototype for all the vans that would follow, it also came to represent something countercultural. In a lot of ways, when you think of it, the gospel is countercultural. It tells us that the way up is down, that the way to lead is to serve, and the way to find your life is to give it away. Few people in history have modeled the countercultural elements of the gospel more dynamically than the Apostle Paul. And as you come to Philippians, just to catch us all up to speed, the Apostle Paul is in prison. He's been falsely accused. He's facing death. He's chained 24/7 to a Roman soldier. And yet, in the midst of all of it, he has this incredible joy. If his joy were based on favorable circumstances and everything going his way or life being fair, then he'd have no joy. But throughout this letter to the Philippians, his words literally drip with joy. I mean, we've looked at it before. In Philippians 1:4, he says this, "I always pray with joy." In Philippians 1:18, he writes, "And because of this, I rejoice, and I will continue to rejoice." In chapter 2 and verse 18, and we're going to see that today. "So you too should be glad and rejoice with me." In Philippians chapter 3 and verse 1, "Finally, my brothers, rejoice in the Lord." And in Philippians chapter 4, that familiar verse, "Rejoice in the Lord always," and I'll say it again, rejoice. So we've been learning about joy in this series on Philippians that we've entitled Joyride. And I think it's especially appropriate that we would jump back into Philippians during this time of pandemic so that you and I would be challenged as we do life to do it with joy to a world that is watching, to a world that is anxious, to a world that is depressed, that you and I would have the kind of joy that speaks of a relationship with Jesus, that speaks of God having done something in our lives. Now, as we come to Philippians chapter 2 and verse 17, we're picking it up where we left off, and we have the Apostle Paul and two of his fellow workers modeling for us the Christian life. And they become for us a larger than life illustration of what it means to serve Christ with joy. If Jesus demonstrated anything for us, it was the life of a servant. He said this in Luke chapter 22 and verse 27, "I am among you as one who serves." In Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28, he said, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." In John 13, you remember after he washed the disciples' feet, here's what he said, "I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you." So as we look at these verses, we're going to see three examples of the characteristics of what serving Christ should look like in our lives. Each one of them is modeled or illustrated by a different person. The first example is the Apostle Paul himself. And Paul is an example of the fact that servants sacrifice with joy. This was a man who experienced joy in the midst of sacrifice. He was glad to sacrifice. Listen to it in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 17. "Even if I am poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all." The imagery here is one of sacrifice. And because we don't do that today, we don't readily relate to what he is saying. In the ancient world, after you had offered or made an animal sacrifice, while the animal was being burned up on the altar, there would be a final act of sacrifice, almost a topping off of the sacrifice, and it would be called a drink offering. And the worshiper would take wine or would take water, might take olive oil, and they would pour it on top of the burning sacrifice, and that drink offering would be vaporized into the air. That's what Paul has in mind here. He sees his life as that topping off of the bigger sacrifice, as a sort of final sacrifice, if you will. Notice he says, even if I am being poured out. In the original, you could translate it, since I am being poured out. In other words, he's not talking about some future sacrifice. He's not talking about something that will happen to him. He's talking about something that is happening to him right now. So he's not talking about his death as a sacrifice. He's talking about his life that he's living now as a sacrifice right at that moment. Remember, he's in a prison. He's facing possible death and execution, but he sees his life and sees that as a sacrifice. What I find so incredible is how he views his own sacrifice. Look at it in verse 17. Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. In Paul's mind, there is a greater sacrifice being made than the one he is making. Look at it. Even if I'm being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith. He sees the Philippian church's sacrifice as the bigger sacrifice. And he sees his sacrifice as just the ending drink offering. In other words, what he's saying is, you Philippians are making the great sacrifice, and mine's just the topping off of that. You say, how can he say that to the Philippians? Well, in the Philippians chapter 1 and verse 28 and verse 29, he tells us they were experiencing persecution. They had opposition. They had suffering. In verse 30, he says, you're engaged in the same conflict that you saw that I had. So they were serving Christ in a hostile environment. They were being persecuted. So Paul says, yours is the big sacrifice. Does that tell you something about the heart of the Apostle Paul? His attitude and his perspective is an illustration of Philippians 2 and verse 3, where he writes this, counting others as more significant than yourselves. Honestly, this is the character, this is the life, this is the example of a humble man. Of a man who thinks of others more than he thinks of himself, as a man who thought more of their sacrifice than he did of his own. And literally, that is so contrary to our human nature, isn't it? I mean, most of us have a tendency to look at our own sacrifice, and we can be very, very quick to recite all the things that we've given up for the Lord. Not Paul. The man was a prisoner. He was facing death. But he viewed his sacrifice as something small, and he makes that sacrifice with joy. Look at it in verse 17. He says, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Do you see why he's rejoicing? He's rejoicing because he is being poured out. You say, how can he do that? Because in Paul's mind, the greatest thing he could ever do for Christ would be to offer himself as a sacrifice. And since he has the opportunity to do that, he has great joy. This is a man who understands that God has done so much for him that all he wants to do is give himself back to God. And he does it with joy. Reminds me of one of my mentors in the early years at James River Church. And I'd go over to their house and he and his wife would be there. And this man had accomplished so much for the gospel. And I remember him on more than one occasion as I would talk to him about motivation for ministry and how it is that he kept his joy in ministry. He said this. He said, "I was just so thankful that God would reach down and save someone like me that I've never been able to get over it. And for the rest of my life, I've just wanted to do whatever I could to serve the Lord." That is such a great lesson for all of us. It encouraged me then and inspired me, and it still does today. Do you remember what God has done for you? Do you remember how He has saved you? Do you remember His grace on your life? And in light of that, I mean, it motivates us to give back to Him. Unfortunately, not everybody in our 21st century church understands that. I mean, some Christians, unfortunately, don't even think about offering a sacrifice to the Lord, let alone being happy about it. And the problem with that is they never then, as a result, know the joy that can only be ours when we sacrifice. John Piper said this, "When joy is given away, it is not halved, it is doubled." That's why Paul's sacrifice increases his joy. So let me ask you this question. What are you sacrificing for Christ? What have you said no to in order to say yes to God, His will, and His kingdom? Servants of Jesus sacrifice with joy. Second, we meet Timothy, and his life models this principle that servants put Christ first. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 19, look at it. "I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that I too may be cheered by news of you." Let me give you a little background on Timothy. He was born in the region of Galatia. So if you've heard of the letter Paul wrote to the Galatians, that was the area where Timothy was born. He was the son of a Jewish mother and a Greek father, and he came to faith in Jesus Christ through his mother and his grandmother. When Paul made his second missionary journey, he took Timothy with him, and he ended up accompanying Paul virtually everywhere. He became like a son to the Apostle Paul. In Philippians 2, Paul was going to send Timothy to the Philippians, and he wanted to make sure that they accepted Timothy, so Paul gave a brief profile of Timothy, and this is how he characterizes him, and it shows us what a servant of Christ is like. Look at it in verse 20. "For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare." The words translated here, genuinely concerned, could be translated genuinely anxious. In fact, that word is translated as anxious in Philippians 4 and verse 6. You say, well, why is Timothy commended for being genuinely anxious when in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6, we're told not to be anxious for anything? I mean, isn't that a contradiction? And the answer is no, because in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6, it's don't be anxious about your own life concerns. But Timothy's concern wasn't about himself. His concern was about others. Do you see, one type of concern is selfish when it's about just you and I and what affects us and how we feel about it. The other is selfless when we're concerned for other people, so concerned that we're praying for them, that we're caring for them, that we're ministering to them. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 21, Paul says this, "They all seek their own interest, not those of Jesus Christ." The idea here then is that Timothy is the kind of believer. He's the kind of servant who's consumed with Jesus. I mean, Paul is pointing that out. He's saying, that's what a servant of Christ looks like. And meanwhile, a lot of the others were concerned with their own interests, with their own concerns, but Timothy was concerned with the things of Christ. He was putting Christ first. A good servant puts Jesus first. Timothy did that. That's the secret of a powerful life. Focus on the interests of Christ. Find out what Jesus is doing and then do it. Make Jesus the priority in your life. And then Paul gives us another example, another characteristic of what it means to be a servant of Christ. And this one comes from the life of a man named Epaphroditus. And his life teaches us that servants are willing to trust. It's not always easy being a servant, and it's certainly not without its risk. And the thing about Epaphroditus is he was a risk taker. We don't know a lot about his background. We don't know who his parents were or how long he had been a Christian. All we know is this, that while Paul was in prison, the Philippian church was so concerned about him that they picked a person from their congregation to go and be with Paul. And Epaphroditus was that person. I want you to think about this for just a moment. Paul is in prison. He is viewed as either a criminal or a potential criminal. If Epaphroditus goes now to a foreign country, is hanging out as a friend of Paul, he too could be viewed as a criminal. So there's an element of risk. There's an element of danger inherent just in taking the assignment itself, just in identifying with someone as controversial as Paul would have been to the Roman government. But watch what happens in verse 25. I've thought it necessary to send you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. You say, why is Paul sending him back? Is he homesick? Look at it in verse 26. For he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Epaphroditus was concerned about the people back home because they had heard that he was sick, and not just sick, but at the point of death. Look at it in verse 27. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I'm the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice in seeing him again and that I may be less anxious. So think of this. Paul is not only concerned about Epaphroditus being distressed, but he's also concerned about the Philippians being distressed about Epaphroditus. And Epaphroditus is concerned about the Philippians who started this thing by being concerned about Paul. Do you get it? They're concerned about Paul. Paul's concerned about him. Epaphroditus is concerned about them, and it's this circle of concern. It's really a living illustration of Philippians chapter 2 and verses 3 through 4. We looked at it a few weeks ago. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. Epaphroditus loved Paul. He loved the people who sent him to Paul, and he loved the Lord so much that he was willing to risk his life to go be with Paul, even if those kind of conditions would put his health at risk. Now, we've had three examples that have illustrated some amazing characteristics of what it means to serve Christ. So let me personalize it in this message for all of us by asking just a few questions. Are you willing to risk your life for Jesus? A servant of Christ is willing to risk their life for the sake of the gospel and for others. What does it mean to serve the Lord? How do you bring that down into our life? First of all, Paul showed us it means being willing to sacrifice for the Lord, all the while doing it with joy. It means, as Timothy showed us, being willing to put Christ first, not getting so caught up in the things of this life that we either forget about Christ or give him the second, third, fourth, fifth place in our life, but making Christ the priority. And third, it means serving Christ in spite of the risk. Serving him in spite of the risk that you might not get the promotion at work. Serving him in spite of the risk that you won't be popular. Serving him in spite of the risk, that's a true servant of God. And that's what God is calling us to do. And the question this morning is simply this: are you willing to do that? I mean, right now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to pray with you that all of us who know Jesus Christ would become more effective servants of Christ, that our life would illustrate these three characteristics. Let's pray.